Good morning. On today's programme, drug trafficking has led to brutal killings, including that of minors, in the French city of Marseille. And a setback for the UK's arms industry after it is excluded from an EU financial assistance programme aimed at improving countries' defence capabilities. But first to Canada, where some of the country's top military strategists are working on a plan to boost the numbers of personnel within the country's armed forces. At the centre of the plan is the creation of a civil defence force made up of at least 300,000 volunteers. In a document recently presented to the country's top soldier, the strategists warn that emerging technologies have created unparalleled challenges to Canada's ability to defend itself, as Dan Karpinchuk now reports.
The modest 9-page document is titled Planning Direction Defence Mobilisation Plan. It was distributed in 2025 to Canada's Strategic Joint Staff, which is an internal group that offers advice and analysis to the Chief of Defence Staff, Canada's top soldier, Jenny Carignan. The plan calls for a whole-of-society approach to defend Canada against foreign and domestic threats, from natural disasters to high-intensity, large-scale combat operations. Carignan calls it a transformational effort, and she says she's thinking about the number of events and domestic operations the military has had to take part in, fighting forest fires, widespread flooding, and so on. She says Canadians will be voluntarily invited to serve. Of course, it's not a done deal yet. The plan must first be approved by the Canadian government in Ottawa, but it already has the support of Defence Minister David McGuinty. He says the notion of having a civil defence force or group of Canadians who are ready, willing, and able to serve their country is something that's been talked about for decades in Canada. He adds that it's something Canada's allies are already doing or pursuing very, very actively. Although he's not mentioned publicly in military briefings, the actions of U.S. President Donald Trump loom large in the background. He has already suggested that it would be in Canada's interest to become the 51st state, and many in Canada say they believe his trade actions and tariffs are ways of bringing Canada to its knees, at least economically. Although few believe Trump would try to annex Canada militarily, most believe the relationship with Washington has changed, and not for the better. And the U.S. raid on Venezuela and his rhetoric about taking Greenland by force if necessary has started a shift in thinking within Canada that military action is no longer unthinkable. And some analysts believe Canada must also be prepared for any civil strife south of its border. Military planners who once played out scenarios that had China or Russia going after Canada's infrastructure through cyber attacks now include possible American intentions. The idea of mobilizing citizen reservists follows commitments made by Ottawa at a NATO summit last year to strengthen Canada's military readiness. It's also not a new idea. Sweden has a civil defense force, part of a total defense strategy, which requires all citizens to train and prepare for war. And late last year, Canada's General Carignan sent a team to Finland to see how that country's civil defense has developed as it tried to maintain stable relations with its next-door neighbor, Russia. What she found out is that Finns are expected to store enough food, water, and medical supplies for 72 hours. There are also lists of those civilians trained in medical first aid, rescue, and firefighting, as well as designated bomb shelters across Finland. Those shelters would be big enough to accommodate 85% of the country's population. Canada's strategy calls for a supplementary force and would initially prioritize volunteer public servants at the federal and provincial levels. Defence Minister McGuinty says it's no surprise that the Department of National Defence and the Canadian Armed Forces would look to many sources to recruit from. Those who do join would learn how to use a rifle, drive a truck, or operate a drone. There would also be fewer age restrictions. They could be anywhere from 16 to 65 and have lower physical requirements. And their training, to begin with, would be limited to 5 days a year. Canada's armed forces in recent decades have struggled to recruit and retain people. It's still short about 15,000 for an authorized strength of 71,000 soldiers and 30,000 reservists. There have also been issues with attrition and retention of personnel. Retired Major General David Fraser says the military has to listen to Canadians and to compete with the private sector. So he adds the military has to pick up its game. But since Trump became president, there's been a significant uptick in interest in Canada in enlisting in the armed forces. But that could also have more to do with Prime Minister Mark Carney's recent announcement to bolster military spending to $150 billion within 10 years and meet the new NATO target of 5% of GDP for every alliance member. Carney also announced a big pay raise for military personnel, saying as the demands on the Canadian Armed Forces have increased, their resources and salaries have not kept pace. He said the pay for men and women who risk their lives for the country should reflect the weight of their responsibilities. Carney's plan includes new jet fighters, tanks, and submarines. That's a big change for the military and for Canadians who have lived most of their lives in a peacetime culture. But some, like Peter Kasurek, a fellow at the Center for International and Defense Policy at Queen's University, question the rationale of a 300,000-member defense force with only 1 week of training to handle a deteriorating international situation or a natural disaster. But General Kedignan says recent surveys suggest that Canadians are responding to the new reality and are looking for ways to contribute. A civil defense force is one way they can. She says recently a senior citizen begged her to deploy him, saying he couldn't carry a rifle or go to war, but he could help. Just let him know how. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Now to France, where the country's second city of Marseille has witnessed a series of brutal killings in drug-related turf wars. Many of the deaths are taking place in the city's poorer northern neighbourhoods, and some involved children as young as 15. On a recent visit to Marseille, President Emmanuel Macron vowed to wage war on drug trafficking. As Rory Mulholland now reports.
Arriving in Marseille by train from Paris is always dramatic. The countryside slips away, the train plunges into a long, dark tunnel, and then suddenly bursts into Mediterranean light. But before you reach the Vieux Port or the city centre, you go through miles of council estates that stretch from the Provence hills down to the docks. These are the Quartier Nord, the northern districts that have come to define Marseille's reputation for drugs and violence. One of them is La Busserine. A man who has lived here all his life takes me on a walk round the neighbourhood. The French state has invested heavily in the area. Council blocks have been refurbished, schools and sports facilities built. From many balconies, you can see the sea and the islands in the bay. It all looks pleasantly suburban. But on many corners stand hooded teenage lookouts. They carry walkie-talkies and warn the dealers if police or rival gangs approach. We pass several before reaching a pedestrian underpass where young men are gathered. A client hands over banknotes. It's quiet today, my guide says. Sometimes there's a queue. The drugs trade has brought extraordinary violence to France's second city, which in recent years has become a hip destination for many Irish tourists. In 2023, Marseille recorded 49 drug-related killings. Last year, 19 people were murdered in gangland disputes. Home delivery of drugs via messaging apps may be growing, but control of these council estates is still bitterly fought over. In November, the charred body of a 15-year-old boy was found in a park, and an 18-year-old was shot dead near the central train station. Police believe both killings were linked to the drugs war. The violence did not pause for the holiday period. On Christmas Day, a body was found in the boot of a burning car in the northern estates. And on New Year's Day, a corpse was discovered in another burning vehicle. Marseille's role in the drugs trade goes back decades. It's long been a gateway for narcotics from Latin America, Asia, and North Africa. Its criminal reputation was immortalized in the 1971 film The French Connection, in which Gene Hackman played a New York cop sent here to smash a heroin pipeline to the US. That film was fiction, but rooted in reality. Heroin has now been replaced by cocaine and cannabis, but Marseille's role in Europe's drug economy endures. It's part of a business estimated to be worth around 7 billion euros a year in France alone. Back in La Busserine, boys in football kits squeeze past the dealers in the underpass. Parents fear they'll be drawn into the drugs trade. Children barely into their teens can earn about 150 euros a shift as lookouts. Older ones can make thousands running dealing points or be recruited as hitmen, earning tens of thousands for a killing. Much of this violence has been linked to the DZ Mafia, now Marseille's dominant gang. Its leaders are in prison, but police say they continue to run operations from their cells. The French government has responded with an ultra-secure prison regime for captured drug bosses, keeping them in near total isolation. Saint-Henri Cemetery is located near La Castellane, another drug-infested estate where France's most famous footballer Zinedine Zidane grew up. 20-year-old Mehdi Kachi is buried in the cemetery. He was training to be a policeman when he was shot dead in the street in November. His murder was probably intended as a warning to his brother Amin, a prominent anti-drugs campaigner now living under police protection. President Emmanuel Macron visited Mehdi's grave last month. "There is no way the gangs will win this war," he vowed while on a visit to Marseille to open a new police station. But even as he was inside the station, it was business as usual in a council estate just down the road, with lookouts on the corners and walkie-talkies crackling. For World Report, this is Rory Mulholland in Marseille.
Finally, to the UK, which has been excluded from a financial assistance programme created by the EU. The programme, which is worth €150 billion, is aimed at improving defence capabilities. It is a setback for the British arms industry, at a time when countries are increasing military budgets. As Russell Padmore reports.
The United Kingdom's engagement with European Union security has often been challenging, but cooperation has been made more difficult by Brexit. With the President of the United States, Donald Trump, driving a foreign policy that seems to sideline Europe and the conflict in Ukraine reaching a crucial moment, it would seem that now London and Brussels should be united on security, not divided. The British government and the country's defence manufacturers wanted to secure access to funding from SAFE, the Security Action for Europe, but talks to join the scheme collapsed as the UK was unwilling to contribute at least €6 billion into the programme, which has a total value of €150 billion. The government here, led by the Prime Minister Keir Starmer, is under pressure to revive the country's economy, and supporting the defence industry is key. According to the Ministry of Defence, companies engaged in activities like aerospace, communications, shipbuilding and manufacturing weapons employ 463,000 people, including members of the armed forces. The defence industry is worth more than €17 billion to the British economy. So it's understandable that the industry wanted to access funding from the European Union, especially when governments are spending more to rearm. The Germans criticised Brussels for not reaching a deal with the British. The French adopted a hardline stance that would have restricted projects who only use a maximum of 50% of UK components. That was unacceptable to the British, so the deal evaporated, leaving the defence industry locked out of Europe's fund. The Security Action for Europe scheme, which provides low-interest loans to arms manufacturers, is part of an EU drive to boost defence spending by €800 billion. It's a response to the growing threat from Russia and cooling relations with Donald Trump in Washington. The British Defence Secretary, John Healey, insisted participation in the SAFE programme needed to be good value for money for British taxpayers and British industry. It did not meet those tests, he said. The UK Ministry of Defence is also facing a quandary over whether to scrap a project to build a new armoured vehicle. The future of the multi-million pound Ajax is in doubt, after trials led to dozens of soldiers being injured, with many of them vomiting from vibration and shaking. The government here had been expecting its NATO allies to buy the Ajax, but if the project is cancelled, that won't happen. Warfare has changed since the Ajax project started in 2014. Combat in Ukraine has shown armoured vehicles are at risk from drones as battle tactics have changed. Being locked out of the Safe Defence funding scheme hasn't isolated the UK, though, from doing deals with individual European nations. The British government has recently signed a contract with Germany worth £52 million or €60 million to procure mobile artillery weapons. The RCH-155 picks up on lessons from the war in Ukraine. Heavy guns need to fire and move quickly to avoid being targeted by drones. The deadly weapon can hit targets up to 70 kilometres away and escape at speeds of up to 100 kilometres an hour. The problem for the UK defence industry is that the mobile gun platform is manufactured in Germany, and future production of the weapon in the UK will mean collaboration with the German company Rheinmetall, which is already supplying weapons to Ukraine. This highlights just how important it is for the UK defence companies to be able to access loans from Europe's SAFE programme so that the industry here can get funding to design and manufacture its own weapons. The British may be locked out of the programme for now, but the issue could be revisited at the next EU-UK summit scheduled for the spring. If it's not resolved by the summer, it could become a diplomatic challenge for Ireland, which takes over presidency of the EU's European Council in July. This is Russell Padmore for World Report in London.
That's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or find us on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Ethna Dodd, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.